Okay, so I guess we can start as always. So welcome once again. So a few words, general advice on meditation before we start out. And one of the things I was asked to remind people of is that in a couple of weeks' time we have the five precept day here at Dhammaloka Center for new Buddhists to come and do the five precepts for the first time, people from overseas to do the five precepts for the first time. And it's kind of really a happy occasion when people take that step to kind of go deeper into the idea of Buddhism, not just meditating, but taking some of the other aspects of the Buddhist path seriously as well. And of course, in Buddhism, the whole point is that morality and precepts and kindness and all these things, it goes hand in hand with the idea of meditation practice. These things are not separate things, they work together. So it's really nice when we see so many, and often many people coming together doing that on the Vaisak day, between 4:30 and 5 p.m. on the Vaisak day, Sunday the 7th of May is when these things happen. It's a great occasion, and I always encourage people to take that step if they can, because it really provides a solid foundation for one's Buddhist practice. And you read in the suttas about the five precepts and some of the things that the Buddha has to say about these things. And it says that when you keep the five precepts, you are, in a sense, you're supporting other beings in the world, supporting them psychologically, giving them a sense of freedom of fear, freedom of being taken advantage of, a sense of liberty from these negative mental states, which makes life less kind of happy and more anxious and all these kind of things. So it's a wonderful gift to give to people when we give them that sense of freedom from these things, so remember that, right? When you sit down to meditate, remember what you're actually doing by keeping these five precepts. This is part of the sila nusati, the recollection of one's virtue, and you're actually doing something very positive in the world. You're holding up the world, lifting the world up, helping other beings to feel a sense of liberation from all these negative mind states. What a wonderful thing that is. This is one of the things the Buddha says about virtue. One of the other things he says is that, you know, when on the Uposatha days you keep the five or ideally even the eight precepts, what he says is that you're becoming like an arahant, right? You're practicing the way of the arahants. This is what the arahants do. They always keep the eight precepts normally, actually pretty much always. This is because for them it is a natural expression of the awakening, the fact that you keep these eight precepts. So in a sense, when you keep the five precepts or the eight precepts, you are doing that thing which the arahants always do. You're approaching the ideal of being an arahant, being an awakened one. You're practicing the same things. And sometimes you find that you're flowing through the world and it's quite easy to keep the five precepts. It's almost as if it becomes a natural part of who you are, right? At that point, again, you are approaching the ideal of awakening, the ideal of arahantship. We're practicing the same way as some of the really great people in this world, right? Like the Buddha, like his great disciples, Venerable Sariputta, some of the great nun disciples as well, such as Kema, the nun Bhikkhuni Ayakema, if you like, Upalavanna, some of these great disciples of the Buddha, also some of the contemporary masters, right? When you see somebody who's really well practiced and doing really well, and you're doing the same thing, what a powerful thing that is to feel that you're walking in the footsteps of some of the greatest Buddhist masters in this world. So use these perceptions when the Buddha talks about these things. The idea is to inspire us, to give us a sense of uplift, to give us a sense that we're doing something really worthwhile, right? You have a right to feel good about yourself when you keep these precepts. You have a right to feel, yeah, I'm living well, my life is not wasted, I'm doing something good with my life. And what a wonderful thing that is. So give that little boost to yourself, and if you do that, all of these things are there to give us that little bit of joy which makes the meditation work out properly here. Okay, so let's check it out in practice and see what happens. Okay, so as always, I start off by just relaxing and finding the ease in the body and the mind. And as always, make sure you take plenty of time to do this. You find that really, you feel really relaxed and at ease and really comfortable where you're sitting. And the more comfortable you are, the more at ease you are, not in an indulgent way, but in a relaxed way. The more quickly the mindfulness will tend to arise. Mindfulness arises from ease, from a sense of well-being, not from a sense of pain or difficulties. So allow the mindfulness to arise naturally in this way. And as you relax in this way, both the body and mind, make sure you experience the delight in doing that, how easy and natural and how wonderful it is just to be able to sit there and just enjoying the sense of relaxation and ease. And just notice how that leads to a natural kind of mindfulness, where the mind wants to be in the present, because the present is pleasant, the present is easy, and the present is enjoyable. remember as you do this practice that one of the most important factors for success is the attitude that you bring to the present moment or the attitude that you bring to the breath or whatever. So remember that and try to draw that attitude into the present moment. And one of the ways of doing that is to remember that right now you are practicing in the same way as all the arahants have in the past. All these awakened beings did just this, the same kind of morality, the same type of meditation practice. What a wonderful thing it is to be able to walk in the footsteps of these great beings. And if you keep on walking in those same footsteps, that one day we also will reach the same destination. And when you get this meditation just right, it is so easy, it is so natural, just one stage flowing into another one. There's no effort. All there is this patient waiting and allowing things to arise, just nudging your attitude a little bit. And as you do that, the mindfulness arises. And when the mindfulness arises, eventually the breath just comes to you. And when the breath comes to you, that is when you're doing the mindfulness of breathing. It all happens automatically. So all you have to do is just wait and sit back and see the process unfolding. No action is required on your part. And once again, we're coming to the end of the meditation. So as we do that, before we do that, just try to review what has happened over the past 45 minutes. Try to understand the process. Try to understand the development of perception, how it either aids or hinders the meditation practice. And as you start to understand this, you understand the dynamics of meditation. Okay, so that's the end of the meditation. Please sit comfortably. Okay, everyone, anyone have any questions or comments about anything? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Everybody good? Great. Okay, so let's go to people from overseas, I think. Yeah, all from overseas, so see what they have to ask. Okay, so this is from Catalina from the Canary Islands. And the question is, how should I embrace stillness within when living with a partner who respects Buddhism but insists on interrupting my meditation moments? Okay, so I guess sometimes you have to tell him that these things are important to you, right? That they really matter, that, you know, please don't interrupt me. And if he has proper respect for you, he will do that. He will understand that this is important to you and it matters to you. And also tell him that when you come out of your meditation, you are much nicer afterwards, right? You're much more friendly, much more loving. You have many more good qualities after meditation practice. So in this way, kind of guide him in the right way so that kind of he feels that, or she or he or whatever it is, feels that it is, you know, it is a positive contribution to the relationship, and also out of respect for you, that he does that out of that respect. So just have a chat with him and tell him it's important, and see what happens. Okay, next one is Sai from Canada. Can you give me advice on how to meditate on a specific feeling and realize what is the root cause of an unpleasant feeling? Okay, so how can you meditate on a specific feeling? The way that best way to do that, in my opinion, is to follow the guidance in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta. And in there, you remember the Anapanasati Sutta is divided into 16 steps. The steps 5 to 8 is precisely the contemplation of feeling, but it's not about it's not about contemplation of unpleasant feeling, it's contemplation about pleasant feeling, right? So the whole contemplation of Vedana, of feeling, can be done just by contemplating pleasant feeling. Yeah. So I would recommend you to do that, because it's much nicer to contemplate pleasant feelings than contemplating unpleasant feelings. If you just do what that sutta says, you don't have to worry at all about the unpleasant feeling business. Skip straight to the pleasant feeling and forget about everything else. And the way to contemplate this is To remember again Anapanasati Sutta, at the very end, the last four steps are the steps of mad insight: Anicca-nupassana, Viraga-nupassana, Nirodha-nupassana, Patanissaga-nupassana. Anicca, impermanence, fading away, cessation, and giving up. So what you see is you see how these feelings change, how they fade away, how they disappear, and eventually how you give them up completely. Giving up in this case means giving up attachment and desire for them. So you notice that as your meditation progresses, you see your mind moving through these things and understanding these things. When they disappear, you know that they are impermanent, right? And then from that comes eventually the giving up. It's almost like a natural process when these things happen. The root cause of these feelings is just contact. It's the fact that you're born. When you're born, we have to have feelings. There's not much choice to it. The root cause of unpleasant feeling is because you haven't really gone. Once you go beyond these unpleasant feelings into deep meditation practice, you understand that large part of the root cause of unpleasant feeling is the body and negative states of mind. Get away from those. All you have left is pleasant feelings. So that's how I would recommend it. So just forget about those unpleasant feelings. Skip straight to the pleasant feelings. Much easier. Karen from Arizona in the USA asks, how can I translate the wonderful experience from stillness or meditation into other areas of life where a sense of urgency is valued, such as work? Okay, first of all, well done that you're getting wonderful experience from stillness. What a wonderful thing that is. Not everybody gets that. That is great already. And the answer is that it is limited to what extent you can actually transfer these things into other parts of life. Family life, work life, all of these things are by their nature quite busy. Of course, there are certain careers, certain jobs that are less busy than others. Maybe you can guide yourself a little bit in the right direction in that sense. But generally speaking, you cannot bring that stillness or meditation into ordinary life. So what you have to do really instead is to make sure that your ordinary life is a support for your meditation practice. What is that support? And basically that support is the sila aspect, right? The kindness aspect inside of you, the compassion aspect, all of these things that have to do with positive morality, how we treat the people around us. And if you have enough mindfulness in daily life to consistently be kind, be compassionate, be understanding, not do the bad things. If you can do that on a consistent basis, you will do what you can in daily life to support your meditation when finally you can sit down and relax, right? And that is often the best we can do with ordinary life, because it is just too busy, too distracting. You can't really bring that stillness fully with you into that life. Even the arahants can't do that, right? Even the arahants, according to the suttas, the fully awakened ones, they think, oh, I wish I could get away from all these people and kind of be still by myself, right? Too much distraction here, too many problems. So even the Buddha wants to get away from people. So there is a limit what we can do there. Okay, so good luck with that. And let's pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha.